And good morning. We welcome you in to a Thursday edition of My Car Guru. As we continue along here, Lenny Lawson is with us.
Good morning.
Good morning to you.
Did you eat a good breakfast this morning?
I don't need a whole lot of breakfast. I come in so early. Usually don't eat before I leave. I've gotten to where I eat these Belveda bars. You ever seen those?
No.
Yeah.
Cheesy?
They're not cheesy. They're
Velveeta.
Like grain. Belveda.
Oh, Belveeta.
Not Velveeta. Belveeta.
I'm just sitting there thinking, visualizing you sitting there eating Velveeta cheese.
No, it's Belveeta.
Is Velveeta cheese?
Velveeta is.
Is it?
But not Belveeta.
Okay. Yeah, I eat those Nature Valley bars sometimes. They're pretty good.
It's similar.
And the Atkins bars are pretty good. Have you tried the Atkins bars?
Yeah, they're not bad.
I'm kind of addicted to grape nut flakes right now. Used to eat those when I was a kid.
They're kind of hard on your teeth sometimes, aren't they?
No, that's grape nuts.
Oh, grape nut bars, you're talking about.
I'm talking about grape nut flakes.
Oh, flakes, okay.
Yeah, somebody hit a bunch of grape nuts with a hammer and turned them into flakes, and that's what I eat.
Okay, well, that's not as bad. Then people used to talk about the regular grape nuts cracking teeth and so forth.
Yeah, they could. Yeah. I always let them get just a little soggy first before I jump in.
Right.
They'll fill you up, right?
I guess.
You've never had them?
Grape nuts flakes?
No, grape nuts.
No, I don't think I have.
So, welcome to Let's Talk Cereal.
Well, it's a
Tim
cereal.
Tim Cable.
It's a Lenny cereal. Lawson. So, it just continues.
You know, we're just starting our day. You know, I was as I was eating my grape nut flakes this morning, I was wondering about recessions.
Really? Okay.
You know, we've had a pretty good run, you know, with the exception of a slight pandemic hiccup and the transformational changes that it has wrought. It's really been a pretty good run, you know, all through the Trump administration through since 2009. You know, we had some tough years back in, you know, 11, 12, but it just really, in the car industry, just has gotten better and better as we went. Now, you know, the major hiccup was the pandemic. And how long can this go on, though? I mean, we had all this pent-up demand, and I'm thinking, okay, so the pandemic squashed everything down, held everything down. And so people still want to buy stuff. And a lot of incomes were dramatically affected in a negative way. And a lot of people have more money than they ever thought possible, you know, because of the run-up in the stock market and stuff. So when is this going to end? I remember in the worst downturn that I've ever experienced was I was pretty young, you know. It was like 1981, you know, when prime rate was 21%. You know what prime rate is now? Interest rate?
Is it 6?
No, it's 3.25.
That's right, 3.25, okay.
And I still believe that banks can borrow from the Fed at 0 now, you know, in order to loan money at 3.25. They got a pretty good deal. But what actually will cause the next recession? And it's typically one of 12 different things. One is the loss of confidence in investment and the economy. You know, when retail sales start to slow down, businesses start running fewer or stop running employment ads. The economy stops adding jobs. Manufacturers cut back. You know, there's just a lack of confidence. I certainly don't see that anywhere on the horizon, do you? Right now?
No.
High interest rates. Now, we have to have some higher degree of inflation now than we did. I mean, inflation, I would think, would be off the charts right now, wouldn't you? Raising prices, especially just in the automobile sector. Lumber prices. I mean, that's got to. But you never hear anything about that in the news. What are they hiding from us, Tim?
I don't know, but it's it can't, as you mentioned, it can't keep going on and on the way it has been. There has to be corrections.
A third cause is a stock market crash. I mean, it hit 35,000 the other day.
Well, there's a difference in crash and correction. You're going to have corrections.
Yeah.
And we're certainly due for one. I think we're due for one, but crash is something totally different, you know.
Falling housing prices and sales. I don't see that happening either in the horizon. The only thing that I see impacting that is just the cost of building a house. My daughters, both of them, are wanting to build a house right now, and they're just decided to wait.
Have to, because as you mentioned, lumber way up, and all the housing materials have just gone way up here lately.
You know, you can have some big crises that are created by banks. Obviously, that's kind of what happened in the 2009 recession, was because of housing market, you know, and over-aggressive lending on the parts of banks, and it created a huge bubble, and it burst. That would fall under the poor management and the effects of deregulation. You know, I'm not opposed to regulation, as long as it's reasonable. Regulation does, keep important safeguards in place so that things don't get out of control.
Do you think we're going to pay for all this stimulus money that they keep talking about?
No, that's, it concerns me that a lot of folks are dependent on, and I think it's really hurting the labor market right now, and why just a lot of the lower wage jobs are just going unfilled because people can make more money at home. So I understand Biden is going to try to crack down on that and making sure that people are actually looking for jobs. They've got
not turning down jobs that they could get.
I mean, I could hire 4 new salespeople right now, just instantaneously, if I could find them. And we've been running job ads on Indeed. We use that website a lot, and just what we're getting is not real impressive. You know, anytime there's a credit crunch and the banks decide they don't want to lend money, then that can cause a recession. When any kind of asset bubble bursts, like prices of gold or stocks or housing, become inflated beyond their sustainable value, that can cause recessions. So, I don't know. I just feel like we've got another couple years of a good run ahead of us, unless something major happens on the world stage. Maybe we have another bug that infects us, or if, like I say, it would take a pretty substantial thing to knock us off course again, but it can happen, so.
Well, I would think in your business they got to get this chip shortage figured out.
Yeah, that's such an odd thing to be happening right now.
Yeah,
but again, it's all the result of the pandemic. And it's the allocation of resources changed. You know, the auto industry was booming, and then it shut off, like turning off a spigot. And so these manufacturers, people started staying at home more, and the demand for consumer electronics increased because people needed stuff to play with and things to do, and cell phones and the explosion of computers and all that stuff. So the chips found another home, and now the auto industry is trying to come back, and the chips are down.
Yeah.
Literally.
Literally. I would think by the beginning of 2022... about all of this pandemic, most of it, I'd say, will probably be in our rearview mirror, don't you think?
Yes.
I mean, that's another 7 months or so from now.
You know, it blows me away that there are still some places that are closed up. We were driving back from Kentucky, and we pulled over to McDonald's, and we were just going to go in and go to the bathroom and, get some health food, like some French fries or something to munch on.
There you go.
And the dining room, it says dining room is closed.
Yeah, there's still some places that are.
I talked to a guy that runs a Wendy's, and he said, Lenny, we could just go ahead and close our dining room altogether and make more money. The dining room, all it does is create messes for us to clean up.
Well, and I think that's one thing, and maybe we talked about this before, I'm not sure, but that's one thing I think the pandemic will change and has changed is, and will change in the future, is fast food restaurants, folks dining in. I think there's going to be a lot more carrying out, going through the drive-thru now.
Yeah. He said we don't even need a dining room.
Yeah.
Like I say, I mean, they can do all the salads. It makes their lines so much more efficient. You know, instead of having to cover the dining room window or the counter and the drive-in window, we can just cover one. And the demand is greater when people are just driving around. You know, I think Chick-fil-A kind of figured this out.
Yeah.
They opened a new Chick-fil-A in Greenville, and they just I think April 1, they opened the dining room. So yeah. I went into the dining room, and I'm the only person in there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Everybody else is in. I mean, there's this huge line outside. They've got, looks like an airport landing strip, you know, and these people with orange vests on and flashlights, you know, directing everybody. And
people with.
They got those little change counters on their waist, like
do.
The lady
they
at the
do.
Old drive-thru yeah. had.
They do.
You know, with the only thing it's missing are the roller skates.
Yeah, but they've got their little notebooks or whatever, the little iPads or whatever it is, mm-hmm. you know, taking orders and little change things on. Yeah. What about these restaurants, some of the fast food restaurants that have playgrounds inside? You know, that's probably a waste of space now.
Well, I mean, what about showrooms? What about new car showrooms? I mean, as far as the... I mean, I've got all these desks in my new Nissan showroom that Nissan made me put in there, and they're empty.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of people do the transaction time for a car purchase has changed dramatically because so much more of it is done online now before they ever come in. There's still a lot of folks that just drive in and come in to buy a car, and it's the first time that they have talk to anybody about buying a car, but the vast majority of them have done a lot of the work, and they're there to pretty much finalize the transaction. So do we need these big mausoleums, you know, these big edifices? I don't know.
Well, do we need boardrooms anymore? You know,
no.
Maybe Zoom meetings are going to be carried right on into the future. I don't know.
You know, I still think you miss a lot.
I do too.
We did church online for about the whole time, and now it's just not like being there. I mean, went into church the other day and seeing the faces and shaking the hands of some and hitting fists with the other and hugging others, and it was just being there. I took a picture of the big stained glass window. And I just wanted to keep that with me. My dad used to look up at that, and there were at the time. He had 7 grandkids, so there were on this picture of Jesus with these ladies standing around. There's 7 children around, and he'd always look up and he said, "Okay, that one's Blaine, and that one's Abby, and that one's Audra." And he always just visualized that.
Mm-hmm.
So that in church experience, the in the boardroom experience, the sales training session where people. You know, are actually in the same room. There's so much happens when people are present.
Yep. It's not the same. We did the same thing. Had church online for quite a while, and it just wasn't the same.
Yep.
So glad to be back in it now.
It really is.
All right, we'll take our first break, and we'll be right back with My Car Guru. We are back here. It is a Thursday morning edition of My Car Guru. I had to stop and think of what day it was there for me.
You know, one of the biggest changes in technology in automobiles has been the infotainment. You know, what used to be the radio and the air conditioning and the clock is now called infotainment.
Infotainment.
So it's information and entertainment combined into one. Now, early on, when the infotainment concept came out, Ford got this bright idea. This is around... 2005 to 2007, somewhere in that neighborhood, Ford got the bright idea that everybody wanted touch controls. Instead of a switch that you push in and it has a tactile click, you know, they just, these touch controls where it would just pick up the heat from your finger.
Mm-hmm.
And problem is, they just didn't work very well.
No.
And you know, and older people tend to have cooler extremities. Would you agree with that?
Right, and they don't touch as firm in a lot of situations.
And so Ford figured out, now let's go a different route. So now there is everything, pretty much everything that's on the infotainment system is now also on switches and knobs underneath, which I like. So I tend to use both. I use the, for the screen, I use the radio and the, you know, the infotainment, the entertainment stuff. I reserve that for the screen, like listening to podcasts and AM, FM, satellite radio and stuff. But when it comes to air conditioning controls, then I like the controls on the, you know, below the screen. To me, it's just easier to use and more intuitive. But that's not the only thing that's changed. You know, engines have changed a lot. Now, when I first got into the business, we had 4 cylinders. 6 cylinders and 8 cylinders, and that was pretty much it. And the 4 cylinders weren't very good. you know, when I talk about the Chevy Chevette, the Chevy Citation. You know, these cars, 2.5 liter, anywhere from 1.8 to 2.5 liters of displacement.
Mm-hmm.
In the early days, they had carburetors. And then they went to fuel injection and made them, you know, perform better. It wasn't, I can't remember the exact year. I'm thinking it was 87, somewhere in that neighborhood. Chevrolet decided to come out with a family of engines that could be, it basically, if you could had a six-cylinder, you could also cut it down to four or three cylinders using the same piston size and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very successful. It first came out in the Chevy Trailblazer.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember it was the first time that Chevrolet, or not the first time, but the first time in a long time, that Chevrolet had manufactured an inline six-cylinder. And you talk to, or a straight six, you know, and you talk to a lot of people who don't know that much about cars, and they get very confused, you know, about engines.
Mm-hmm.
You know, today it's something that a lot of people don't really need to worry about, because there was a time when a three-cylinder engine was not near as powerful as a V8, right?
Right.
Now we got three-cylinder engines with turbochargers on them that are more powerful, way more powerful than the V8s that we used to have.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, the new Bronco Sport comes standard with a three-cylinder turbocharged engine.
That's crazy.
Isn't that crazy? So engine layouts, let's just do a little basic primer on engines. A straight engine is where all the cylinders in the engine line straight up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they go from front to back.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, these are four cylinders or six cylinders, although mm-hmm. there have been straight eights.
Mm-hmm.
There have been straight 12s. I mean, there have been some really long, big engines back in the 30s. But mm-hmm. typically now, that when you see a straight engine, it's going to be a six-cylinder,
mm-hmm.
Straight six. BMW made these famous, you know, in their cars. Because they really, really performed well, and it was a very smooth engine layout. There's also something not to be confused with a straight engine, although it sounds very similar. It's called an inline engine. Now, typically, straight engines are perpendicular to the ground, okay, and run from back to the front of the car. That's
mm-hmm.
a straight engine.
Mm-hmm.
An inline engine is similar configuration of the pistons, but it can be a slant. Have you ever heard of a slant six?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that was a big thing that a lot of car companies did, and it allowed them, the reason, that, you know why they slanted the engine like that?
Hmm. Why?
Better aerodynamics. It allowed the hood
to
be lower and allowed them to package the engine in the engine bay in a better way.
So, a lot of Plymouths and Dodges did that.
They were slant sixes, and it's a very popular engine. Then you have something that a lot of people refer to as a flat engine. Some people refer to that as a boxer engine,
mm-hmm.
and I'll explain that. But the flat engine, the layout is flat. Its cylinders are laid down in flat in both directions. Both sides will have cylinders positioned in a way that the pistons punch outwards. This layout is really good for enabling a car to have a very low center of gravity. It's one of the reasons why Volkswagen Beetles, you know, people back in the old days, they would have a Beetle just because it would go really good in the snow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it is a very low center of gravity. It was a rear engine car with the engine placed right over top of the rear wheels, or right behind the rear wheels, not over top of it. But it gave them more room. So another type of, and you'll find a boxer right now. The only thing that manufacturers that are doing boxer engines that I know are Porsche and Subaru.
Mm-hmm.
Subaru is really big into boxer engines. Then you have the V engine. You can have a, you know, I've seen a V2, believe it or not, a V4, a V6. Mm-hmm. You know, normally they're even number cylinders, but that's Chevrolet made the V8 famous. Ed Cole and his small block Chevy V8s. More of Chevy V8s have been made than any other engine ever in the history of the car business. We'll finish this in just a minute.
We're back here to wrap up My Car Guru on a Thursday morning talking engine types.
Most people that care about this stuff are performance oriented. You know, they really they like to talk about their engines and the power that they have and the capability that they have.
Mm-hmm.
Most people don't care. They just want their engine, they just want it to start when they turn the key, right, and be reliable.
And get from point A to point B.
Right. And but don't be shocked if the car that you're looking at has a very small displacement engine. And again, when you put your foot on the accelerator, and it, as long as it accelerates 0 to 60 in somewhere around 7, 8 seconds, most people are going to be say, okay, well, that's fairly brisk, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Mach-E Mustang, the electric vehicle we sell, goes 0 to 60 in 3.9 seconds. you know, if, to put that in perspective, a very $500,000 Ferrari will go 0 to 60 in just a little over 2 seconds. All right.
Mm-hmm.
So, do those numbers matter? No, not really. It's just a bragging point. It's something these guys that go to Cars and Coffee and go to car shows, they like to talk about, mm-hmm. you know, and how much power their engines have. But, you know, again, three cylinders. I remember the first three-cylinder engine was a Geo Metro. You remember that car?
Yes.
And I said, nobody's going to want to buy this thing, and nobody did.
0 to 60 in 15 seconds or something.
Yeah, like very few people did. power now is derived from direct fuel injection and turbochargers. Yes, you do have some engines that don't have turbochargers and have a lot of power, but they're rare. That's what's getting the power that we have, and that's the path that the Ford Motor Company took, and it's really paid off really well for them.
Mm-hmm.
GM stuck with larger displacement engines with cylinder deactivation in order to be able to turn a V8 into a six-cylinder or a four-cylinder while you're driving the car.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of this technology is fascinating, but I guess the bottom line for folks is do a little research, test drive the car, make sure it performs the way you want it to, and then don't worry about it.
That's it. All right, that'll do it for My Car Guru on this Thursday morning, and we'll talk to you in about 23 and a half hours from now.